And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket.
Dave, I'm sure that you know, I think practically every school person, every school child has seen the old photograph from the 1860s of the black slave. We see his back. It's completely distorted by the injuries, the wounds, the welts, yeah, of whips that he has suffered in his lifetime. He's an adult, and he is the living image of chattel slavery in America. You know that photo, right?
Yes, yes.
And you know also that that Trump has ordered that it be removed from all of the national parks where it's on display and from the Smithsonian Institute where the photograph is on display, because it tends to, in Trump's words, focus too much attention on how bad slavery was. That's his quote. Yeah. That's the quote. What do you make of that?
Well, it's another attempt to rewrite history, in essence, or unwrite history, I guess is a better term. Yeah. But the thing about the past is that they want to repicture or whatever is mostly their fixation over America's treatment of blacks. And it's always seems to be a lose-lose for blacks. All the breakthroughs that have been made since the passage of the Civil Rights Act 60 years ago, they're undoing in all sorts of ways. We mentioned last week, I think, the fact that the Justice Department is going to pursue Civil Rights Act actions, but for white people who they think have been wronged by civil rights enforcement type of things. And the beat goes on and on and on, taking other references to slavery out of textbooks or out of teaching guides and teaching manuals. This is just a continuation. Pete Hegseth firing generals who are either African American or women. Going back to rename the military bases back for Confederate soldiers. The portrait of Robert E. Lee at West Point. First of all, the fact that he became a traitor to the country, but secondly, that one portrait is the one where they show his slave in the background. So all of these things, they're going back to the pre-civil rights movement. They're trying to recreate an America of the 1950s, which and a male-dominated type of culture, and we'll see what happens. They're able to capitalize on this during the last election, where you had a black female running for president, and what they did is they ginned up more votes out of white males than they've been able to get previously. And that's how they've been able to maintain their power and their dominance of the political system at this point. So all of these things are interconnected.
I don't know if people realize how extensive and how foundational first slavery and then the new form of slavery, Jim Crow, You know, slavery was first, it was in American history. The first slaves came here in 1619, and slavery existed as an institution from then until 1865. Then Reconstruction was overthrown in 1870, and the Jim Crow era from 1870 to 1963. If you add that up, that's 339 years. This is 2025, 406 years since 1619. So from the time that the American continent was settled by Europeans in 1619, 84% of the years, 84% of that time has seen either slavery or the attempt to a new form of slavery, subjugate Black Americans in some new way, but essentially make them second-class citizens. 84% of our history is characterized by that. That is not only a legacy, that's a living inheritance that we have. It's no wonder that you have people like Vance and Kirk and Trump, open racists. That is the culture that they want to go back to, and that is the culture that they sincerely believe ought to be here. And, you know, if 84% of your background is that, you can well understand why it's so strong and how difficult it is to fight against and how important it is not to stop fighting against.
Well, the other thing about it is how it's being used now, where a lot of people, particularly white males, are economically distressed and have been falling further and further behind. Remember, the middle class has been shrinking. Jobs that were traditionally male jobs in manufacturing have disappeared. And the solutions that the people that you mentioned present are to blame the other. To blame Blacks, or to blame, now it's Hispanics predominantly, for taking what folks thought would be rightfully theirs, or at least thought that if they played by the rules, that they would get ahead and fulfill what we call the American dream. And as long as they can deflect what's really happening by this blame game and this divisiveness and this scapegoating, they will continue to get away with it. We were mentioning before we went on the air, there were two incidents within the last week or so, or two stories within the week or so that got buried, mostly because of the Charlie Kirk story, and we'll talk about Charlie Kirk in a little while, but enormous corruption. One was the deal that was negotiated by Witkoff in the Middle East. Was it the UAE or the Qataris were allowed to buy certain AI chips that they previously did not have access to? And then lo and behold, on a quote unquote separate deal, the people who run those countries bought in hundreds of millions, or it was billions of dollars. Billions of dollars of stable coins that were controlled by the Trump family.
Right.
Now, the words quid pro quo come to mind. But, you know, that story, in years past, would have been enormous. And it just sort of passed over. And then there was the other
story. Well, wait a minute. Before you go further, it's important in this connection to show the comprehensive corruption involved. The Supreme Court decision not too many years ago ruled that it is not a corrupt act and it is not an evidence of bribery if the bribe takes place after the act. It's only bribery if the bribe takes place before the act by the politician. If in other words, if I give you whatever it is I'm going to give you, a payoff, a Porsche, to appoint my son something, that's a bribe. But if you appoint my son something and the next day I give you a Porsche, that's not a bribe. That's what the Supreme Court ruled.
Yeah, that was the Bob McDonnell case.
Yes, exactly.
The ex-governor of Virginia.
Yeah.
Which is an absurdity.
Yeah. But this court ruled it.
Right.
Just to show you how important the judicial system is in structuring and justifying this swing to this right, to the right.
Right. And the majority of those justices were, you know, part of this infrastructure.
Yeah, exactly.
That we've had. So, and so this one was very carefully structured right after.
Yeah.
The second deal was announced.
Right.
Now,
but I interrupted you. You wanted to talk about
The other deal was that the Securities and Exchange Commission had been pursuing three different parties to recoup hundreds of millions of dollars in fines and penalties for doing things that violated the securities laws or corrupt act.
Yeah, they defrauded investors.
They defrauded investors.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, this week they dropped that case. And as it turns out, the three cases were people who Donald Trump pardoned and wiped out their convictions.
Right.
So, you know, it became a lose-lose again for the American taxpayer, lose-lose for basically the justice system.
And lose-lose for the people whose money was stolen.
For people whose money was stolen,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The only winners were these few people who managed to grab a lot. One person, I think, was like $760 million,
something like that. That's right. And the other one was $100 million, yeah.
Yeah, there was one that was kind of small. What was it, $60 million or something?
63 million. I don't know. He didn't have.
Oh.
he didn't quite understand what he could do.
Yeah, you know, it was the famous quote of Everett Dirksen: "A billion here and a billion there." And you were, pretty soon you're talking real money. You know,
right. Well, that's what we got.
That's
institutionalized corruption as this symbol of freedom.
This is exactly one of the prime things that Ruth Ben-Ghiat's been talking about as a sign of authoritarianism. And she's not alone. You have Jason Stanley out there who moved to Canada out of fear of things. And, you know, and then this gets tied into the Charlie Kirk situation with the firing or the suspension of the TV talk show hosts, and again the interplay there about it. Brian Stelter, who is a media critic for CNN, he was they parted ways, and he's back. You know, essentially talked about this, but he gave the same story that Ruth Ben-Ghiat and Jason Stanley give. That this is they want people to self-censor. This is how you do it. And I think one of Jason Stanley's rules, if I'm not mistaken, is don't self-censor. But when you, the other thing that Trump has been doing is dividing and conquering. You know, if all of the law firms had stuck together as they originally were talking about, he never would have gotten away with what he got away with. And the ones that fought are winning in the courts. If all the universities had gotten together stood up for common principles, he would not have gotten away with what he's doing. But every time he wins one of these, it makes him stronger, builds him up a little bit more. And the ones that are next in line have a harder and harder time to stand up.
You know, the New York Times had a long story about the Kimmel firing and the mechanics of it. It's very interesting. At the very end of what was a very long account, they revealed that the media frenzy, the internet frenzy that was whipped up to demand that Kimmel be fired, which was only 24 hours after he made the comments for which he was fired, was whipped up by fewer than 12 internet accounts, each of which circulated more than 200 messages an hour for the next 24 hours, demanding that he be fired. And that finally got picked up by the FCC commissioner. Fewer than 12 accounts is what provoked all of that. Now, people feel outnumbered. They feel that they, they're in the minority. Mm-hmm. You're not outnumbered. You're not in the minority. It's just that nobody on your side is sitting there churning out 200 messages an hour for hour after hour. They don't have that interest. They don't have that ability. They don't have that organization. They're not doing it. But there's 11 of them, 10 of them only, fewer than 12 that did that.
Yeah.
Until it reached the guy with the power to make the threat.
And it creates perception.
Yeah.
The other thing that's linked in here, again, we get to now to the concentration of power in the hands of a few. All right? That's what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Was that in the situation with Jimmy Kimmel, technically they said he's suspended, but you and I both pretty well think that he's not going to get back on the air, at least not with ABC, that two of their main holders of stations, franchises, were the ones that instigated or put pressure on ABC to do that. One is Sinclair, which held over 30 ABC stations, and which has a highly conservative bent and a concentration of things. For instance, they have editorials that they produce at headquarters and require all of their stations to run, even if they're not things of interest in those particular stations' areas.
And by the way, they're not merely highly conservative. These are MAGA supporters.
Yeah. And then you have Nexstar. And Nexstar owns two of the stations here in northeastern Pennsylvania. And the leverage that Nexstar was succumbing to was the fact that they want to buy out Tegna, another conglomerate that owns a number of stations. And they're going to need FCC approval. And they can pretty well read the fact that they wouldn't get approval unless they curried favor with the Trump administration. And this is just a replay of things that happened not long ago with the Paramount deal, that with CBS and the lawsuit against 60 Minutes, which really didn't have much merits legally, but had a lot of political clout behind it. And now, of course, now you're getting into the person who bought who's buying Paramount is Larry Ellison, who owns, Oracle? Oracle. And his son is going to be in charge of that deal, the Paramount-CBS deal. And now he's also, the Ellison family, are in line to buy TikTok, or the American version of TikTok that's being negotiated. And that, of course, has a huge reach, far bigger reach than CBS does. And to young people in particular. So we're seeing all this concentration, this oligarchy, this authoritarianism. It was interesting. The one person that kind of stood up to this is someone who really has no clout anymore, so to speak, except his own voice. And that was Michael Eisner, who used to run Disney, mm-hmm. which owns ABC. And he kind of attacked Bob Iger, the CEO of Disney, saying, you know, what are you guys doing? You know, this is wrong in all phases, and you're a big corporation. Stand up. Have guts. I'm waiting to see if there can be a coalition kind of built around Michael Eisner and the few people who see through this that can do some sort of a counterattack, but I'm not, you know, I'm not waiting for Godot, so to speak, for it to happen.
So far, it hasn't happened. So far, none of the companies have stood up. None. Zero.
Right.
And because when you attack one of these companies, each one has to pay attention to its concerns, its individual concerns. And settling always makes sense. It's riskless. Yeah. You took a loss, and that's the loss you took. But that's it.
Tax deductible loss.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
It's the cheaper way out.
The cheaper cost way benefit. Out.
Cost benefit analysis. Of course, the cost to freedom of the press or academic freedom, you can't put a dollar figure on that.
No, but that's why you. When people say, well, government should be run like a business, well, when government is run like a business, this is how it's run.
Right.
This is exactly how it's run. The public good and the business good are two opposite matters.
Or, well, not entirely, but they can be.
They can be.
They usually are. They can be. Yeah. You know, if
here they are.
If you're, yeah, I mean, if the government and the business of producing vaccines get together, they can work for the public good. But those instances are fewer and fewer between.
Usually it happens that the government puts up the money, takes all the risk, and somebody else profits, and you get to pay the expanded cost of them. Well, something that costs them a quarter costs you $100.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, the old privatize the profits and socialize the risk.
Yeah.
I tell that to my son, particularly with the extraction industries, you know, the coal, oil, natural gas, and if you look around the world, the gold, the way the Spanish did it, and gold and silver in the Americas, or diamonds in Africa.
Right.
All of those are extraction industries.
That's right.
And usually, the owners make out like bandits, and the workers and the public are left holding the bag, putting things back.
Not usually, every time.
Yeah.
Every time. Well, this brings us to free speech.
Yes.
Right? This brings us to free speech. You've discussed and described how the consolidation in the radio and in the television and radio industries has now reached a very extreme level. What, there are five companies that control 90% of the stations? Maybe four companies?
Yeah, something like that.
There are no newspapers?
Yes. You say private equity, you know?
Yeah, people get their information from Facebook or TikTok, or that's five people right there. You can name them.
Yeah. You know, it was funny. This week I had a concrete example of that. I had to do a legal advertisement down in Schuylkill County. And so I looked up the newspaper down there because I had to publish it in a newspaper of general circulation. And I called and left the message. And a few hours later, I get a call back. And my ID says Scranton Times. And so I pick it up. And the lady, you know, I said, what? And she said, that's one of our papers.
Right.
They consolidated. There's like five papers or six papers consolidated. The three that were bought from the Scranton Times, the Standard Speaker in Hazleton, the Citizen's Voice of Wilkes-Barre, the Scranton Times here. But the company had already owned the Pottsville Republican, or Herald Republican, and I think the Reading Eagle, and what have you. So they have one person doing what five people used to do. And the costs were enormous because there's no competition.
There's also no local news.
Right. Very hard. You know, a couple of days. One of the former reporters for the Scranton Times works in our office. She was a very good reporter. She had the court beat. And I said to her, I said, did you see the lead article? This was Friday in the Scranton Times, about a lawsuit that had been filed regarding the building of warehouses and development of land against the DeNaples and things. And she said, yeah. I said, did you see where the first paragraph said the lawsuit was filed last month? So they're now reporting, you know, 3 weeks later on a lawsuit that was filed last July. Amazing. This is what happens.
It can't happen otherwise, right?
Right.
There's nobody to pick up the court register. Nobody's traveling around to on a daily basis to see what the ledger says. How would they know what the news is?
Right. I mean, the only things they're doing, they're getting the marriage licenses and the tax liens, because those they can pick up electronically.
Right.
That kind of thing. So this is another consequence. We're back to private equity. I used to say all roads lead to or from the Koch brothers and on this conservative movement. Now I'm amending that to say it also, they all lead to back and forth to private equity.
Well, isn't it the case that the investors, the financiers, have dominated world capitalism since the dawn of the 20th century?
Yeah.
So this is just, changes and reshuffling the deck chairs on the ship of finance capital. That's what it amounts to. But it's the same. It's the same group. It's just different individuals occupying the seats.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And it's a question. I think Ted Cruz kind of hit on something this week when he started questioning what the Trump administration was trying to do with the FCC in their attempts to intimidate or harass free speech, because he looked at it and said, hey, if we allow this to happen, if the shoe ever falls on the other foot, they're going to do it to us.
So right.
It was more out of self-interest than idealism.
Right.
But, in this world, we'll take that kind of self-interest to help us.
Yes, that's right. I thought that getting back to Charlie Kirk and to do about the way they use the right wing is using his shooting, his murder, to crack down on all their opponents, whitewashing completely what Charlie Kirk stood for. There was a very fine, I thought, comment by a Reverend Howard Leslie, who told his congregation, his summation of the whole thing was, how you die does not redeem how you live. And that's true. And I think that really tells you the story about Kirk. How you die does not redeem how you live. This is a guy who lived his life with racism, promoting racism, promoting the subjugation of women.
Misogyny.
Misogyny, yes. Attacking. He was an anti-Semite. He promoted the theory of the Great Replacement. Whatever was rotten in American political life or in world politics today, he was a champion of that. In 30 years ago, he couldn't have gotten himself a stage anywhere. Nobody would have gone to listen to him. Today, they pretend that he's a martyr. He was, the modern version of Goebbels.
Yeah, there were people in Germany in the 30s who were martyred and used in order to crack down on free thought, free dissent.
Yeah, Horst Wessel, the Horst Wessel lead, right? Horst Wessel was a young Nazi who got killed in a street riot that he was part of. And they wrote a hymn to him, and the Nazis marched, the Nazi armies marched singing that hymn to Horst Wessel as they conquered Eastern Europe and burnt the cities and massacred the Jews, the Russians, the gypsies, the homosexuals, whoever they could get their hands on that they thought were untermenschen, subhuman. That's the role that they're using to promote Kirk to.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's see what happens. It needs to be said. Yep.
It needs to be said. All right.
We'll see you next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.